Welcome back to Sound Effect from 88.5 KNKX. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and today we're talking about royalty. When your parents name you royal, that's got to be hard to live up to. But legendary Seattle sports writer Royal Broham certainly did. He started at the Post-Intelligencer in 1910, and he wrote there until his death in 1978. So that's pre-World War I through Jimmy Carter. And he also played an important supporting role in the story of the 1936 University of Washington crew team, which is immortalized in the bestseller Boys in the Boat. Author Daniel James Brown joined us to talk about it, starting with a passage from his book.
His opinion, his connections, and his tenacity were so well regarded that he was quickly becoming something of a ringmaster of civic life in Seattle, sought out by grandees of all stripes, politicians, star athletes, university presidents, fight promoters, coaches, even bookies. But above all, Broham was a masterful promoter. Part poet, part P.T. Barnum, Emmett Watson, another legendary Seattle scribe, called him. What he wanted to promote, above all else, was Seattle. He wanted to transform the world's view of his gray, sleepy, logging, and fishing town into something far grander and more sophisticated.
Why was it so important to Royal Broham to promote Seattle and publicize it?
You know, I think he, like a lot of people in the 1920s and 30s, felt that Seattle just wasn't really getting its due respect in the world. A lot of Easterners literally didn't know where Seattle was on a map. And it became kind of a quest for Broham to put Seattle on the map. And one of the ways he could do that was by promoting local sports. And at the time, the Huskies were a very good football team. But beyond that, there wasn't a continuing sports story in Seattle that he could use, except for the crew program at UW. And so he became very, very interested early on in what the coaches at UW were doing.
Why do you think he made that connection between the sport of rowing and respectability for the city?
Rowing was, in those days particularly, still seen as a gentleman's sport, as sort of an elite sport, as a classy sport. And by coming out of Seattle with a rowing program that could compete with the Ivy League schools in the East, he was giving Seattle that sort of patina, that sort of endorsement of a place that has class. It's not just a fishing town. It's not just a mill town. We are world class out here.
So when did it become apparent to Royal Broham that these rowing crews of 1935 and 36 were going to be something special, not just another run-of-the-mill team?
Broham developed an interest early on in not just in the crew program, but with a particular bunch of kids at the crew program. He became very interested in what in 1935 was the sophomore boat. This was the boat that had Joe Rance and some of what would eventually become the Olympic crew in it. And he really thought they were the team, the crew that ultimately might be able to go to Berlin and represent not just Seattle, but the country in the Olympics. And so he focused on this particular bunch of guys, and he followed them for the next several years and promoted them strongly in his column.
He was quite partisan for them.
He was quite partisan for this particular crew, yeah. I think he liked and I think he cultivated the notion that these were not just college kids that happened to come from a campus out in the West, but these were kids with a working class background, kids who in some cases had in fact worked in the woods or in mills. I think he thought that was a helpful part of the narrative, and absolutely, I think he stoked that.
Yeah. So Rome followed this team as they sort of notched win after win, high profile victories over California and then over the Eastern schools in the national championships, all the way up until the Olympic trials, in which in dramatic fashion they became the U.S. Olympic crew team.
Right.
And then the story took kind of a turn when they found out that it wasn't going to be so simple to get themselves over to Germany, and Broham had a role in that. How
right.
did that play out?
So what happened is just a couple of hours after these kids from UW won the right to be the U.S. Olympic team, A guy named Henry Penn Burke from Pennsylvania Athletic Club came to him and said, "Well, great, congratulations on winning the berth to the Olympics." But he told Al Ulbrichtsen, the coach, "I hope you understand your boys are going to have to pay their own way to Berlin." And Ulbrichtsen, that's the first Ulbrichtsen had heard about it. He assumed the Olympic Committee would be paying their way. The university didn't have any funds to send them. These kids didn't have two nickels to rub together. So it was a huge problem. So that night, Royal Braun and Al Ulbrichtsen in particular, and other people associated with the crew, started making phone calls back here to Seattle. And the phones rang deep into the night. And by the next morning, steering committees had been formed. And by that afternoon, there were dozens and dozens of people out on the street corner selling these little paper badges for 50 cents to raise funds. Royal Brougham wrote a column about it. Over about 48 hours, they raised $5,000 in the middle of the Great Depression, which, of course, was a lot of money then.
So they managed to do it. They booked berth on a steamer or whatever and, and went across the Atlantic to Hitler's Germany. And there they were at the 1936 Olympics. Brougham went along to cover it. The Germans dominated the rowing events from, you know, top to bottom almost. Mm-hmm. And then the culmination was the eight-man crew, in which the Huskies were competing for the United States.
Switzerland, Hungary, Great Britain, America, Italy, and Germany are in the final.
So the guys from UW had a lot going against them the day of the gold medal race. Don Hume, their stroke oar, was very, very ill with some kind of respiratory infection, was running a high fever. The weather was windy, and despite having turned in the best qualifying time, the University of Washington, the USA team, was assigned lane six out in the windiest part of the race course. Because it was so windy out there, they didn't hear when the start of the race was called. And so they didn't know it had begun until they saw the British boat just to their left lurch forward. So they rowed hard, but 1,000 meters down the race course, halfway through the race, they and the Brits were tied for dead last.
Halfway, Italy still lead, with America on the far side of past Great Britain. And here on the left, coming up, hand over fist on Italy, of Germany.
At the last possible moment, Don Hume suddenly snaps his head up, opens his eyes wide, and starts rowing just absolutely beautifully. And the boats begin to gain back on the leaders, who at that point are Italy and Germany out front. Just about 100 meters before the finish line, they catch the Germans and the Italians. But for that last 100 meters, the bows go back and forth. It's just, you know, nip and tuck those last 100 meters or so. The last perhaps 10 meters, the Huskies put on one final surge and sort of thrust the bow of the Husky Clipper across the finish line, and they win that gold medal by 6/10 of a second.
Just in front, the win by a yard. Italy second, Germany third.
Amazing. And so an incredible story for a guy like Royal Brougham to write. I mean, this must be what he's in it for. So how did he tackle that job, and what happened?
So we'll never know for sure. We know that he did, in fact, rush back to the press room and pound out a story, and it must have been the story of his life because he'd worked at it for so long. What he didn't know when he dispatched the paper back, the article back to Seattle, was that there was a strike going on, a newspaper strike going on here in Seattle. The PI was out on strike, and so that article was never published. And as far as I know, has never actually seen print.
Isn't that a heartbreaker?
It is. It's terrible. And I would love to see it. I mean, this was absolutely the moment of glory. And we are not quite sure how he put it into prose.
And as we said at the beginning, I mean, one of Brougham's passions was to publicize and really put Seattle on the map and brush up its reputation. And he saw this crew story as being part of that, an asset for that project. So I wonder to what extent you think he and they succeeded.
I think he did succeed. I think that it was the beginning of a trend towards greater recognition of Seattle and of the West Coast, in fact, as important players in not just the world of crew, but the world of sports and a place that you had to pay attention to. Seattle still had a lot to go through. Of course, we did have Boeing here, and Boeing would become enormously important in just a few years with the beginning of World War II, and that certainly put Seattle on the map in a different way. But I think that there was a beginning there. I think this story really does represent sort of a first step in that direction.
Well, Daniel James Brown is the author of Boys in the Boat, number one bestseller, and thank you so much for coming in to talk about Royal Brougham's role.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.